Shake up your weekly meal plan at Whole Foods Market with the Taste the Mediterranean event. Find sales on robust olive oils, plus juicy no antibiotics ever chicken, and hearty beef chuck. Complement your dinner with a sun-drenched salad featuring grape tomatoes, organic bell peppers, and crunchy cucumbers. And while you're cooking, graze on a mezze spread filled with charcuterie and delightful cheeses. Taste the Mediterranean at Whole Foods Market in-store and online.
NetCredit is here to say yes to a personal loan or line of credit when other lenders say no. Apply in minutes and get a decision as soon as the same day. If approved, applications are typically funded the next business day or sooner. Loans offered by NetCredit or lending partner banks and serviced by NetCredit. Application subject to review and approval. Learn more at netcredit.com/partner. NetCredit. Credit to the people.
Last Word with Matt Cooper on Today FM.
For the week trending, Ro McDermott is back with us. She was with us last night, talked about movies, and we'll talk more about Gene Hackman during the week trending. And Cathal O'Sullivan is with us as well. And Cathal, I want to start though with Andrew Tate, who the Trump administration has gone to lengths to put the Romanian authorities under pressure to allow him to leave the country, which he has done via private jet to go to Florida. Now, just for those who may not be familiar with Andrew Tate, who is he and why is he so deeply controversial?
Yeah, so Matt, for those listening who aren't aware of him, he's kind of this self, what he describes as a self-proclaimed misogynist influencer who has...
He's proud of being misogynist, is he?
Yes, he is kind of proud of this fact and is kind of on record saying it a number of times. He says, "I'm a realist, and when you're a realist, you're a sexist," which is kind of, I suppose, offensive to so many people out there, notwithstanding just females. But also, he started out, I suppose, as this dual citizenship holding kind of influencer who was on YouTube and did a lot of social media content. That's where I first experienced him, seeing his content online and things like that.
You weren't actively searching it out, were you?
No, he's coming up on Instagram feeds and TikTok feeds and things like that. But the man is actually a kickboxing world champion 4 times, and that is totally beside the point. But he has become, I suppose, one of those people who is saying, I suppose, offensive things online, outspoken things online. He kind of got in a bit of a tussle with Greta Thunberg back in 2022. He engaged with a row with her and mentioned that he had 33 cars and would show her kind of all of their emissions. So he's, I suppose, for anyone that isn't aware of him, he's just this, I suppose, offensive character who you don't want to be dealing with.
Ro McDermott, though, he's highly influential amongst a lot of impressionable young men. And the misogynistic line is important, given that there have been multiple serious allegations of sexual violence made against him, which is why initially he had been arrested in Romania.
Yeah, he's accused of sexual assault, of rape, of sexual trafficking. In a now taken down statement, he has bragged about what he says is getting women into porn, essentially, and taking young, vulnerable women, getting into what they believed were relationships, and then pressuring them to go into pornography. And he has bragged about that. Those statements have been taken down since the charges were levelled against him, but an incredibly dangerous man, but became incredibly famous and incredibly influential online. And as we know, there have been reports that were out last year saying that for young boys who are going online, within 11 minutes they are shown misogynistic content, and they are shown the algorithm keeps pushing the people like Andrew Tate, if not him himself, who make money out of this misogynistic content and make money in these ideas of toxic masculinity. And I think whenever particularly women talk about toxic masculinity, you get people going in going, "You hate men." No, if this was about masculinity, I would say masculinity. It's toxic masculinity, which is the idea that men have to be dominant in all spheres of their life to prove their worth. Andrew Tate tells young men, if you don't make money, you're useless. He has said depression doesn't exist, you're just feeling sorry for yourself. He says women are useless and intrinsically lazy and just using you for your money. So he's eroding young men's ability to have faith in themselves, have a sense of worth in themselves, to connect with their emotion, to believe that they're worth anything if they're not getting fancy cars and having these objectifying relationships. So hugely, hugely damaging. But I do think the fact that he feels safe going to America is not coincidental.
Well, it's quite extraordinary that the Trump administration is known to have put pressure on Romania to allow him to leave the country. However, it's also very interesting that the governor of Florida, Ron DeSantis, is furious that he has turned, that himself and his brother have turned up in Florida, said if he had known, he would have tried to stop them coming. And there is, it seems, a bit of a backlash in America against the idea, even from those Republicans and on the right, that this guy is beyond the pale.
He is, but I mean, backlash when someone is already in the country seems also politically motivated. I would not be holding up Ron DeSantis as someone who champions the rights of women, to be honest. But I think the fact that Tate cites Trump's presidency as a reason they felt safe returning to the US proves that the Trump presidency, his own history of misogyny, including his court-proven sexual assault of E. G. Carroll, has normalized misogynistic behavior in political discourse and in the States.
I know in preparing for this item tonight, both of you had a look at a DCU resource for schools to tackle toxic masculinity. What did you take out of it, Carl?
Yeah, I suppose the first thing you see when you go into this is Andrew Tate's picture. Like, you're kind of shown it straight away, his YouTube videos where it says young men should not show fear or show emotion. And I suppose taking this out of to a school or putting it into a school, what I took from it was that it is a great resource for teachers and for students to be using, because you think of a young, I don't know, 13, 14-year-old who's experiencing Andrew Tate online and getting the content, they mightn't be going out and searching for it. Like, I don't outwardly go and search for Andrew Tate, yet he comes up on my feed. So I suppose teachers need to be looking at it and using it, because if he's out there telling them that men should not show fear or not should show emotion or using misogynistic or homophobic slurs, it's just, I suppose, a reason for teachers to be using it straight away when they come into school.
You had a look at it as well, Ro.
Yeah, and I think it's really important and really necessary. There's been a rise in sexist and very gendered bullying happening because young men are echoing the subject matter and the kind of taunts that Andrew Tate and his ilk are using, like telling girls to get back in the kitchen. But it's also this narrative of victimhood, essentially, that Andrew Tate is telling and his ilk are telling young boys the rights of women and the rights of LGBTQ people are taking things away from you, which is demonstrably not true. Men have not lost any rights, but they're creating this victim narrative of if other people have equality, that means less for you. And because there's a lot of things happening for young men, I mean, there's a housing crisis. I teach a course in DCU called the Sociology of Adulthood, and the students there, all 18, 19, 20, all say, we know what the picture of an adult is. It's someone who has a house, who gets married, who has kids. That is not available to us. We can't afford it. We're never going to get there. So there's a sense of purposelessness. There's a sense of despair. There's loneliness. And Andrew Tate is then coming into that emotional vacuum and saying, blame it on women and blame it on LGBTQ people. And we need to teach boys that is not the answer. And he is not bringing you empowerment. He is disempowering you and profiting from it. So teaching things like media literacy is really important.
I want to move on. There was an extraordinary video released by Donald Trump on his Truth Social site during the week. It was an AI-generated vision of Trump's Gaza, sort of a Las Vegas-style resort in the Gaza area, devastated by the war of recent times. We're going to play you the music from this video, although you really should look at it.
Donald's coming to set you free, bringing the light for all to see. No more tunnels, no more fear. Trump Gaza is finally here. Trump Gaza shining bright, golden future, a brand new life. Feast and dance, the deal is done. Trump Gaza, number one. Trump Gaza shining bright, a brand new life. Feast and dance, the deal is done. Trump Gaza, number one.
How should we view this? Is this just a vision for a better future for Gaza? Is it a bit of fun putting it in an AI-generated video? Or is it a deep, deep insult to those people who have lost their lives in the Israeli bombardment of Gaza since October 2023 that should be condemned?
Yeah, I think it's deeply offensive. And I suppose the 48,000 or so people who have lost their lives in Gaza, like the families, the victims, everyone are outraged and they're offended by it. He calls it a dream Gaza and Donald Trump will set you free. I think this looks more like a nightmare for those people in Gaza. It's like, it shows Elon Musk eating hummus and Benjamin Netanyahu on a beach on a sun lounger. I think it totally offends anyone who has lost their life in Gaza, because like these people,
and the people who are displaced and who have been threatened with displacement to allow for this real estate venture. But could it be that, Ro, this is typically a video that's trying to provoke that is trying to go after the woke. Yeah, we'll wind them up with this type of thing. That some people are actually having a bit of a laugh with this.
Well, I mean, I'm never going to say the Republicans aren't trying to have a laugh, but this isn't about people who are woke. And I will like to quote Jane Fonda at the SAG Awards, who said woke is just caring about other people, actually. So the idea of wokeness itself is ridiculous. But this is a capitalist utopia video. It's a modern colonial narrative dressed as economic opportunity, like creating this Riviera vision. First of all, it's pushing this colonial civilizing mission of looking at a place destructed by a genocide and saying, well, let's make it better by building skyscrapers and selling things. And it's this idea of that, I'm sorry, is propping up what has led to the genocide in Gaza already, is this commodification of land and culture and this idea of taking territories, occupied territories, and turning them into profit generating resorts. And this is the image that he's presenting. And there will be people who will look at that and go, well, isn't it better than the destruction? No, I mean, giving Palestine back to Palestine, people, letting them rebuild their culture and their homes, not turning this horrendously destructed state into a place that's up for profit, I think is absolutely outrageous. So I think even thinking about how this video makes us think about international perception and diplomacy and people's vision of what Gaza could be and how we could develop it, how could we hopefully start to heal it in some small way. But presenting this vision is going to make people go, oh, well, this is a solution. Let's go here.
Yeah, I'd echo that in that, like, healing the, I suppose, the city of Gaza. It's interesting timing from the Trump administration to, I suppose, be promoting this video with, I suppose, the ceasefire set to run out, the first ceasefire, and I suppose pressure being put on the Israelis to come back to the table and, I suppose, impose a second ceasefire. It's just very interesting timing to, I suppose, put something forward that is so offensive.
Okay, we're going to take a break. We'll come back and talk about Gene Hackman's death and many other stories of the week in The Week Trending with Roe McDermott and Cathal O'Sullivan after this.
You can have the last word. Text or WhatsApp us on 087 4 100 102.
The last word
with Matt Cooper
on Today FM.
So, Cathal O'Sullivan is a producer at 98 FM and Roe McDermott, Irish Times advice columnist and Hot Press movies editor, with us for The Week Trending. Roe, when you were with us for movies last night, I asked you to concentrate on Gene Hackman's career rather than the circumstances of his death and that of his wife, Betsy Arakawu. Can you tell us what the update is? Because there's a bit of mystery about all of this.
There's a bit of mystery. So I think the initial suspicion, they said, authorities said that there wasn't any sign of foul play. And because they were both found dead in their home, I think there was immediate assumptions were maybe a carbon monoxide leak or a gas leak or something that had taken them both in their sleep, perhaps. But then there was an update saying they were found in different rooms, that Betsy Arakawu was found in her bathroom. A space heater was in there that looked like it had perhaps fallen. There were pills in there, which doesn't mean she had taken any pills. It's a bathroom and there are people in their 60s and their 90s. But then that Gene Hackman was found in a mudroom and he looked like he had collapsed, but also that they had been there for a significant amount of time. And so it just meant that it didn't look like there was any evidence of a gas leak, no evidence of carbon monoxide leak. And I think the fact that it seems like they have been there a while was also very upsetting.
How long is a while? That hasn't been set out, has it? Because you've been wondering.
No, they went into descriptions of the body, and I am slightly wary of repeating what I read, because I think, you know, it's a tragedy that has happened, but the reports I was reading went into a significant, quite upsetting amount of detail about the conditions of the body, and it was making me think of the idea of ethically reporting on these deaths. Like, was this someone who wasn't in the public eye? Were this a normal couple? Would we be going into this level of detail? And I don't know how useful it is. I think saying they had been there for a number of time and opening up that question of were they isolated, even though they, you know, Gene Hackman was rich, but he was in his 90s and it's the responsibility of elder care or connection.
Well, it did. I thought that was a bit sad, Carl, the idea that they'd been there for a long time. And they may have been reclusive, but, you know, he had, I think, 3 children from his first marriage. You would have thought that there were children and grandchildren who would have been in contact with him, and that even people of their assumed wealth would have had people, carers, who would have been coming helping for them rather than them been left alone.
Yeah, absolutely. And it was 2 maintenance workers who raised the alarm with the emergency services that the bodies were found in the home separately. But these 2 maintenance workers had been in contact 2 weeks previously with them. So I assume they had organised maybe something to, I suppose, be fixed in the house or something like that. And there was no sign of forced entry. What I found confusing was the reports that there was a German Shepherd dog owned by the couple found in a bathroom closet. So was the dog put in there before, or reportedly anyway, near to Arakawa. So I don't know if their use of closet was the bathroom or where Arakawa was lying as well or not. So I suppose like that, there's some confusion about the death, but there's no sign of injury and the local utility company found no sign of a gas leak as well. But like that, you think to your older people in your life, like you say, Matt, your grandparents and stuff like that, like was there no one there to check on them? I suppose like, significant man like Gene Hackman.
And I think the presumption was maybe because Betsy Harwick was in her 60s and previously healthy, and so it might have just been a really unfortunate accident, and the assumption would be, well, if anything happened to him, she would be there and vice versa. But I just think I want people to be aware that there, I think there's a really fine line between public interest and sensationalism, and that's when I was reading some of the reports that were going to the descriptions of the body and saying, you know, these were people, they have families. I also think, of course, Gene Hackman was an incredibly renowned actor and really important, and we spoke a lot about his legacy and his awards yesterday and great performances. But Betsy Arawaka, they died on, you know, apparently at the same time. And there's so many stories about him and she's not getting mentioned. Her family are reading these reports that are saying, Gene Hackman has died. By the way, his wife also died. And even that just feels horrendous. So I would hope that the media coverage kind of tones it down and is a bit more respectful.
Okay, let's move on to other things. It was a story Ben had at the 5 of 5 that really caught my attention, Carl, that more than 1,800 motorists who got fines and penalty points issued to them are having these fines and penalty points revoked because An Garda Síochána and GoSafe have identified that a static speed camera on the N17 near Claremorris in County Mayo was not certified. Now, it was fully functional, it was accurately identifying the offences, and yet these things have all been struck off on the technicality that it had not been certified. What do you make of that?
So yeah, like you say, the camera that was originally used had a faulty focus mechanism, and when a new camera was installed, the certificate of calibration wasn't given to it. So this is the reason for, I suppose, these penalty points being revoked. And some, I think, just above 1,800 motorists are being told that their fines and penalty points are being revoked. It's just, I suppose, you almost want to play Saw Doctors. I wish it was on the N17 at this point. Like, it's just, I suppose, funny in that you think to the date of the 20th of December and some of these fines had not been paid by February 12th, so that's over the 28-day period when you must pay a fine. I know right well. But you must pay this fine, so a lot of their fines might have doubled, but no...
But hold on, I think the point is, though, I mean, it wasn't certified and it should have been certified, but to strike out accurate identifying offences when the camera was fully functional, is that the correct thing to do, Ro, if we are being serious about dealing with road traffic offences?
I think it is, because it's the law. And in the same way that like criminal investigations get thrown out because evidence isn't handled correctly or warrants aren't issued correctly, and even if the evidence is there, it isn't handled correctly, like, we have checks and balances for a reason. And I think if it was the other way and that people were inaccurately being fined from a certified camera, we wouldn't be saying, well, it's certified. So of course there has to be checks and balances. But I think there are a few issues. First of all, the issue of people speeding. Like, there are so many people speeding. And I was coming into you yesterday to do movies, and I said there were 3 accidents on my way in, and I was very nearly late.
But I also have been for speeding in built-up Dublin City Centre.
No, but I saw two
Although
people
maybe it was
breaking
people
red
on their mobile phones.
Mobile phones, and so many people are breaking red lights now. And I think since COVID, there has been a normalising of being really irresponsible on the roads that is happening. So I think people have to take some personal responsibility. But I do think, like, I'm thinking of the motorists who were fined and the 800 people who paid their fines. They're not getting those fines refunded, which I think seems slightly unfair, and possibly they should. But I think we have to look at public confidence in road safety campaigns. So if speed cameras are perceived as unreliable, will compliance with the speed limits decrease? And is there a sense of accountability and justice and trust in these systems? And I think, you know, it's an automated system, and I think the idea of surveillance technology is kind of tricky anyway. But if they're not certified, I think, yeah, they should absolutely have those fines revoked, but also people should stop speeding on the roads.
Yeah, I think, but I do think these, like, obviously the surveillance, there's the idea, issue of surveillance, but I do think these cameras are kind of, I suppose we might be seeing more of them in the future, in that, like, they do cause people to slow down for that period of time, that length of time. And if they were, I suppose, the one that I'd use most is on the M7 around Bird Hill in Limerick, and people are slowing down in that area. We see the loss of life at 25 now on our roads for this year. So I suppose it might be a case of us seeing more of them so long as they have that certification.
Something I just realised is if you're using Google Maps for as your sat-nav program, it tells you what the speed limit of the road you were on is, and it also highlights what speed you were going. So I also think people just should be aware, but that could open up possibilities for investigating people you're speeding if you have that data on your phone. So I'm telling it to people to be aware. Slow down, but also be aware of how your phone is tracking your speed.
Okay, reluctantly, I actually am going to break into this just something unexpected, because there's another Donald Trump story from the last few moments.
Delightful.
Vladimir Zelensky is in the Oval Office with Donald Trump. And according to a report I'm reading from just an alert from the Financial Times, Trump raised his voice at Zelensky in the presence of the media and said, "You don't have the cards right now with us. You start having problems right now. You're gambling with the lives of millions of people. You're gambling with World War III." And then Vice President J.D. Vance chipped in. "Do you think that it's respectful to come to the Oval Office of the United States of America and attack the administration that is trying to prevent the destruction of your country?" The Ukrainian leader responded, "Everybody has problems, even you, but you've a nice ocean and don't feel it now, but you will feel it in the future."
So Donald Trump is essentially threatening Zelensky because Zelensky wasn't as deferent as he wants, which is a prime example of toxic masculinity in terms of, "I am the most dominant person in the room, you have to prove that, and if you don't, I will threaten you." But these are not idle threats, as we know. Ukraine has been absolutely devastated by a war, and Donald
an Trump... invasion, an illegal invasion by a dictator who the Americans, under Trump, are not calling out.
Absolutely, thank you for that correction, it's very important. But I think just that idea of wielding your power and threatening people with war, people who have been absolutely devastated for political gain, and using that to bolster your own ego to show that I am a strong male leader. Like, it is absolutely repugnant. And these are, again, these are the examples of leaders that we are seeing young boys looking up to and being told, yes, if you act like this, you will get the most power you possibly can. It's terrifying and repugnant.
I'm just looking at the photograph of the two of them in the Oval Office. The body language is quite extraordinary. Zelensky clearly went in and he was prepared to fight for his country, and there's clearly arguing with Trump, and Trump is doing the sort of the gesture with the thumb towards him while not looking at him to the photographers there.
I was just saying, I think anyone who voted for Trump or didn't vote for Trump even, but the fear that we had in November for seeing him win the election is all coming to pass now. It's
worse,
coming through worse, yeah. And threatening World War III at a time where, I suppose...
Well, no, blaming Zelensky that he'll be creating World War III if he doesn't surrender to the aggressor.
But that is victim blaming. I'm going to cause World War III, but it'll be your fault because you pushed me to. It's literally the language of abusers going, "You've made me do this." But I also think, like, I know, you know, America obviously is incredibly powerful. We're seeing through these threats that they're constantly threatening violence, they're threatening economic disparities and all these implications for countries worldwide. But when we have Irish politicians who this week are saying Trump is an ally for peace, like, the cowardice there. I think Zelensky is a politician who, through necessity, is standing up for his values, but we all need to do it.
Thank you very much. Roe McDermott and Cathal O'Sullivan. We'll be back with Ian Guider after traffic with Mark Hogan.
The Last Word with Matt Cooper. Weekdays from 4:30. Today FM.
Hear that? Spring is back. And so is Church of Seafood. With 8-piece shrimp, surf and turf, or fish sandwich. Each starting at $3.99. Offer valid at participating locations.